I'm Alex Breitenbach.
I'm Sean Cabrera. And this is the Big Red Hockey Cast, the official podcast of Cornell Big Red Hockey, produced by the Big Red Sports Network. As always, thanks for listening and check out the Big Red Sports Network at CornellBRSN on Instagram to never miss out on any Big Red action. And speaking of Big Red action, we're just going to actually dive right into it with Friday night hockey night, as Alex likes to say. We were at Quinnipiac, and possibly one of the most outstanding results of the season, a 1-0 victory. 1-0. We shut them out. Shut them out somehow.
Yeah.
The Big Red entered a rocking People's United Center unfazed. Only 6 minutes into the game, Cornell capitalized on the power play. Imagine that's already now. We already see that Cornell hasn't been the best on the power play, but somehow they drew first blood on a power play on a Jack Malone deflection goal off a Travis Mitchell slap shot. And the rest of the game was what most would call the Ian Shane show or the Ian Shane spectacle. He was unreal, godly. He was absolutely inspired. He faced an onslaught from the Bobcats. Shane and Cornell's ironclad defense shined as they held the high-powered Quinnipiac offense to a goose egg on the scoreboard, a big old zero. Quinnipiac's frustration boiled over at the end of the game with a full five-on-five brawl ensuing at the buzzer. I was kind of hoping the goalies would also go at it just for the hell of it.
But I know.
C'est la vie, I guess. But with time expired in regulation, 120 penalty minutes were handed out with all 10 players on the ice receiving 2-minute roughing penalties and 10-minute misconducts. Absolutely unreal. It was eventful. There's really no other way you could put it. It was really an inspiring performance or an inspired performance by Cornell. With that being said, the Cornell power play, Alex, I think you'll like these numbers. They were 1-for-2 with 3 shots. Yeah. Not bad at all. We like the 50% ratio. We like that. Not bad. Now with the penalty kill, Cornell was perfect. 2-for-2 with 5 shots against. Faceoffs, we also somehow outmatched Quinnipiac 34-30. Again, that's in favor of the Big Red. And shots on goal. Now this one, this only proves why it was the Ian Shane show. 42 shots from the Bobcats to the Big Red's 19. Unreal numbers. That's more than double our amount. Yet Ian Shane somehow managed to get a shutout and well-deserved too. And speaking of Ian Shane, he had 42 saves on 42 shots. Now, on average, the college hockey goalie gets about 21 saves per game, roughly. This man got exactly double of that in a single outing. Again, 42 saves on 42 shots, a career high. And this is for his second shutout of the season. So one could say it was really an Ian Shane marvel. And Quinnipiac goalie Yaniv Perret, or as apparently the commentators like to call him, Yaniv Perret or Peretz, right?
Yeah, it's so weird.
He had a 17-18 save ratio, really 17 saves on 18 shots for a .944 save percentage. And some notable takeaways: Cornell completes the season sweep against Quinnipiac for the first time since the 2017-2018 season. I believe I was just a junior in high school, if I'm doing the math correctly, really quickly off the top of my head.
Yep.
And Cornell also wins its first game in Hamden since 2017. That was half a decade ago now. So look at that. We're making history in the right way, in the right direction, seemingly. And Ian Shane's performance resembled that of Matty G during the 2019-2020 season. Again, we cannot emphasize how divine he was in his net, basically. He was unstoppable. He was a brick wall. Sure, there were some rebounds here and there, but you know what? He knew how to recollect himself. And he was, like I said on the radio on WVBR, he was a panther. He was ready to pounce. He was unstoppable. And he stopped the Bobcats on numerous grade A chances. With that being said, Cornell continues their recent success on the power play, climbing to second in the ECAC on the power play with a stellar 20.5% power play percentage. 20.5%. Wow. Weird, right?
Yes, indeed. I'm shocked. No, okay, okay. Let me preface that. Like, I should not. Okay. Yeah, that was me. I shouldn't have said that. But
it's okay.
I think, you know, that's truly shocking.
I understand why it's shocking. I mean, I'm shocked myself as I say that, given that what we've said really all throughout the regular season. I mean, it seemed like the power play system was not too fruitful, or at least not too ever present. But somehow we're second in the ACAC with that statistic. So take it as you will. And the Big Red once again shut it down against the Bobcats on the penalty kill. Imagine, arguably one of the best offenses in all of college hockey, really one of the best offenses. They certainly have the best goalie at the moment with Yanni Perret.
Yeah, favored to win the Mike Richter.
Exactly.
That is a big thing for him. He was still pretty good, in spite of only allowing one goal. After that, you know, we did miss an empty net chance. I was very upset about that, but, you know, still a very good thing. It was a good game. And although I just want to get into this because, unfortunately, we have no intermission report this week, but we will have an intermission report in the future. So definitely, as the playoffs continue, keep your eyes peeled for our colleagues, Gabby and Sophia, who will be recording voice memos with their phones to get the latest scoop on what the fans and basically anybody thinks. As we've seen, it could be opposing players even. However, keep your eyes peeled for the higher powers there. Now, I got to talk about this because I made the trip to Hamden on Friday night. I actually left early because I wanted to get away from the snow, but I got to say one thing about that. That is the most hostile of a territory I have ever been in as a Cornell fan. And I know my producer, Mike Farku, will agree with me on this because he was also in Hamden Friday night. And I think we were one of maybe five people that were rooting for the Big Red in basically a packed house. The Teletubbies, who are basically like the line of faithful for Quinnipiac, they were there. The QU Ice Cats, that's like they have cheerleaders for their hockey team. So like they have no football, but they have the QU Ice Cats, which are the cheerleaders for their hockey team. It's actually pretty cool. It's a very, very beautiful environment, a very beautiful ice rink. But boy, is it hostile, because I did ring the cowbell during the second period. I never did it in the third because I almost got the crap beat out of me. I swear. I'm sitting in like I was the only Cornell guy surrounded by QU students. Mm-hmm. So of course I did the cowbell, and then all these people are jeering at. I was ceaselessly mocked by this one guy sitting behind me every time Shane would make a good save or when they celebrated the goal. And I was like, yeah, let's go. And like all the other guys would be like, yeah, let's go. And I'm like, it was brutal. It was brutal, but a very, very, very fun game. Well worth the trip. And I highly recommend, so we can get more Line of Faithful at those games. For those of you who are Line of Faithful who live in Connecticut, come to the Hamden game. Go to Hamden to support the Big Red, because that was actually really fun. And they served concessions. I'll say that. That was also good. I was able to get snacks during the game.
Let me ask you, Alex, how far would you say is the New Rochelle Westchester sort of community from Hamden, Connecticut? How far would you say?
Maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours. Okay. Because like I am, honestly, it's an hour and 5 minutes from my house flat. Mm-hmm. It's actually not like, okay, people think it's in New Haven. It really is not. Like Hamden is like basically, yes, it's a, like a suburb of New Haven or whatnot, but it is really, really like the campus is pretty rural. It's a beautiful campus. But it's a no. I was able to stop, get something to eat, and I crashed at a buddy's house. So a buddy of mine goes to QU. But so I was in enemy territory on Friday night. However, now we got to get to Princeton, because literally the day after, I drove another 2.5 hours over the GWB to go down to Hobey Baker Arena in Princeton. And we got to talk about this here. So it was littered with red and white in what we felt was pretty much a home game for the Big Red. I remember, and also big shout out to Ariel Staffen and her family for hosting a bunch of Line of Faithful for us in Princeton, and providing us with some good food and some nice chit chat before the game. That is an awesome tradition. It was great. But yes, so we get to the rink and literally about 90% of the fans there were all Cornell fans. Like, there were very, very few Princeton fans, if any. And this was their jungle night or their senior night too, which was even more hilarious. But anyways, let's get into the gameplay here. It started with a bang from Sullivan Mack scoring his first collegiate goal. Only 46 seconds in the game, the place went absolutely nuts. And Cornell dominated this contest, giving the Tigers very few chances throughout the game. The Big Reds' next goal would be another first, with Sebastian Durbin scoring his first goal of the season with a little under 6 minutes left in the second period. So they did actually hold us to 1-0. You know, we thought it was going to be a little bit closer throughout that first period. But Cornell would put the game out of reach halfway through the third on a terrific individual effort from Liam Motley for his second goal of the season. And Princeton actually would end up pulling their goalie with more than 7 minutes left in the third. I would not advise that. But it was allowing an empty netter for Kyle Penny to seal a 4-0 scoreline. Now let's take a second to look at the stats here. The Cornell power play was 0 for 4 with 5 shots on goal. So definitely Princeton very good on the penalty kill there. Cornell on the penalty kill, we were still perfect, 3 for 3 with 2 shots against. Faceoffs 25-22 in favor of Princeton. That's an interesting statistic, yeah. because we outshot them 34-23, but yet they hold the advantage in the faceoff circle here. Now, goaltending stats, 23 saves on 22 shots for Ian Shane, who got the nod for the second night in a row. Everybody thought that Nate McDonald was going to get the nod against Princeton, but it was Ian Shane, and he again delivered with a second straight shutout and third shutout of the season. Jeremy Forget at the other end of the ice for Princeton got the nod, and it was his senior night, and what a terrible senior night that was. However, 30 saves on 33 shots for a .909 save percentage, so not actually bad.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, and so I just want to take a second to talk about the atmosphere at Princeton as juxtaposed to the atmosphere in Hamden at Quinnipiac, because you went from, like, literally people would heckle the crap out of you if you even said "Go Big Red" in Quinnipiac to the place would go nuts, like, or people would yell "Lucky Civ" or stuff like that. And like, you know, when Cornell scored, the place would go nuts. And it's like, I remember them saying, like, the announcer, like, announcing some sort of Princeton sweepstakes to whoever's ticket won a free Princeton Tigers jersey. And somebody behind me was saying, nobody wants it. They're probably rooting for Cornell. And it was pretty hilarious. But, okay, then I have to tell this story. So I rang the cowbell, and I did telephone chants for Jeremy Forget. We were lucky enough for his crease to literally – the way Hobey Baker Arena is set up, it's a small rink. It's a very beautiful, rustic, small rink, kind of just like lineup, but a little bit way smaller. But anyway, so we're sitting in the back, and – it was the side that Forget was defending during the first and third. So he's about maybe 10, 15 feet away from me. So we did the telephone chants, and apparently I didn't think of this beforehand, but his parents were at the game and sitting like about maybe 5 to 6 seats away from me.
Yeah.
It was hilarious because, you know, we say, "Hey, Civ, your father, Andre Forget, called. Hey, Civ, your little," like, all the family members, everything. So we do the telephone chant. Apparently, that really ticked off his father, because all I remember, at least I think it was his father. No. Because this guy actually, like, got up and started yelling at us. Like, everyone in our section was like, he's like, "Go back to high school." Like, that's so inappropriate. And then so we all started, we're like, "That's why we're here." And then we all started a massive "We can't hear you." Oh, it was hilarious.
Oy.
It was so hilarious. And that's the first time that I've done it in an enemy rink where the parents have been there. But I should have figured it. You know, it was senior night. Because, like, after every goal we scored, I made sure to yell, "Happy senior night, brother. We'll be here all night."
Oh.
It was really fun. Really, really fun. Anyways, so it was the great atmosphere. Big showing for the Big Red. Anyways, notable takeaways. Cornell ends the regular season on a high note. That's pretty self-explanatory. A third straight win and a back-to-back shutout to the Big Red. Again, a bunch of firsts in the first game, in the Princeton game with Sullivan Mack having a goal taken away against Clarkson, as everybody knows, but he got the goal this week. Seb Dervin scored for the first, got the monkey off the back there. And it's the second of his college career. Ian Shane had a first perfect weekend of his collegiate career. And the Cornell's defensive play would continue to shine even into Saturday night, even with some key injuries headed into the weekend, as we've seen junior defenseman Peter Mazika, freshman Michael Suda, and Jimmy Rahill have done a great job filling in for the likes of Hank Kempf and Jack Lagerstrom this weekend. However, Cornell, now, hold on. I'm going to look this up quickly before I get to it, just because I want to give you the right stats here. So Cornell, okay, good. So Cornell is not locked at 18. They are now 17th All right. in the NCAA rankings following their win over the number. It is no longer the number 5 Princeton. They're now number 8. And non-top 20 Princeton. Right? What?
He's number 5 Quinnipiac, right?
Yes, Quinnipiac. Because Quinnipiac is now number 8. They dropped to number 8 because they lost to us, and then they actually lost to Colgate, which is even more interesting surprising. Because I remember on Saturday night when we found out that that Quinnipiac beat Colgate to secure a 4th round seed. I'm kind of spoiling it here, but the place went nuts. It was hilarious. And then so like I said, we managed to hold on and clinch the number 4 seed in the ECAC, giving them a 1st round bye. And the Big Red will now host the highest-seeded first-round winner at Lina Rink in a best-of-3 series on Friday, and that's March 11th to March 13th. Now, you know what? Actually, we'll do it for the week ahead, because we actually have some stuff to talk about with regards to playoffs in this podcast, and I want to touch on that, but we can do it in a second. We have a very, very special guest in our Sinbin this week, who was unanimously voted by almost everyone on the team to be the worst DJ. However, the staff all have an amazing, think very highly of him as the guy with the aux cord. They would want him. Of course, you already know who we're talking about. It's Liam Motley. Welcome back to this edition of the Sin Bin here on the Big Red Hockey Cast. And today we have a very, very special guest with us in the Sin Bin today. And honestly, one that I've been waiting for a very, very long time. So it is our pleasure to bring to you Liam Motley. Mots, how you doing, man?
Yeah, great. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate having me on here. And I've been looking forward to this for a couple of weeks. So yeah thanks
yes,
again.
Yes, so have we, honestly. Well, first of all, I was practiced. You guys practiced today?
Yeah, we practiced today. We took the day off yesterday just because, you know, it's a bye week and we're not playing games. So maybe give a lot of our top players a rest, but also like practice today. And we want to stay, you know, up to date, keep the skills up for, you know, when we play in 2 weeks.
Yeah, no, I'll bet. And so without further ado, I'll just jump right in. So first off, what a road trip. I mean, I followed you guys sort of. Big Red completes the sweep of QU, Quinnipiac, and did something really I honestly didn't think it was going to be that good, but then finished off the season at Hobey Baker Arena with a 4-0 win. So, like, you know, I'll bet the boys are really buzzing because not only did we beat QU, we shut them out. And then that win at Princeton.
Yeah, for sure. It was that's always a road trip I look forward to. QU Princeton. QU is such a, you know, great building to play in. They always have a rowdy crowd, as proven by the end of the game there. But especially to beat like Quinnipiac, who, you know, has been such a strong team this year, and have that defensive effort of 1-0. Even more, like, Ian played so well in that. It was amazing, you know, experience for him as well. And then, you know, that sometimes kind of not a trap game, but sometimes you come into, you know, a game against Princeton, which obviously not ranked as high as Quinnipiac, but still such a hard team to play against. And I think to have, you know, a follow-up effort on that Saturday was just, you know, a great experience for a young team like us and a really good way to like play going into the playoffs. So yeah, it was, I think, a really well done by, you know, everyone on the team.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you kind of beat me to it there, but there is certainly something to be said about the juxtaposition of the atmosphere of the two arenas. Because I know I could certainly see it from a fan perspective. I almost got the crap beat out of me at Quinnipiac trying to ring the cowbell. Oh, goodness.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's kind of interesting. That's one thing I love about college hockey is like how it's different, so different between rinks. Like, for example, we go to Arizona State and it's like this tiny rink, but still kind of a really rowdy crowd. But it feels like there's more people in the rink because it's so small. Then you have like, went go to North Dakota the next weekend and it's like an NHL facility, but you know, 10,000 people still every weekend. So again, like kind of coming back to QU, a beautiful rink, but you know, a really big crowd. And then Hobey Baker, you know, despite being maybe a bit of a smaller and such a, you know, smaller rink, it's a really historic rink. And it really feels like the crowd's on top of you because of, you know, how small it is. And then obviously like we pull really well at Princeton with the Cornell crowd. So it's like amazing to have the band there, like playing our alma mater at the intermission. So yeah, it's really cool experience.
And now I was going to focus on the QU game a little bit, but what was said prior to that game in the locker room? Like, how did you guys prepare for battle? Because I know, well, I personally was hanging around you guys during the pregame stuff because you guys were the only Cornellians there at that point. Yeah. I was the only guy wearing a Cornell jersey, so I had to come over and stuff. But, like, what was said during the locker room? Like, how did you guys prepare for that battle? Because that truly was one.
Yeah. I think a big, you know, just underdog mentality. Like, we know, you know, we're coming in and playing – with the top ranked teams in the country, and that we really can't afford to make many mistakes. And I think, you know, a lot of our games against the top ranked teams this year have been so good just because I think we're so in tune with the details of the game and not making those mistakes. And I think, you know, as proven, like, I think our record's pretty good against, you know, those top teams, that we've really been able to kind of use that underdog mentality and come out with a lot of wins. So yeah, that was kind of the main thing.
Yeah. And then, I mean, on Saturday then, you know, was it like kind of a feeling of sweet revenge against Princeton? Because, you know, we had that terrible upset at home. But
yeah.
Then we go essentially to, well, I thought of it as Lion of South, honestly. There were way too many Cornell fans.
Yeah.
There should have been, but it was awesome.
Yeah, no, it's like if any team beats us in our own rink, it's like, you know, we hate that. We know the fans hate it. And you know, if we can come back and pay them back in their own rink, like, that's a win for us. So yeah, definitely some of that, but you know, also just, you know, we knew how big the stakes were of winning that game and getting the bye, not really worrying about like what Colgate did. You know, we know we had to, you know, do it ourselves, and yeah, we ended up doing it. So yeah, it was great.
Yeah. And also on that, you know, you got to tell us about that goal you scored, because what a physical performance as well. Cause you know, you're a man on a mission there. I thought that's what it looked like from my angle. You were coming straight at me.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't score too many goals. I think I only have around 5 career goals, but no, that was that one felt really good for me just because the last time I scored was like, I think Yale this year. And, you know, to kind of get that in my last, you know, as a senior, my last away series was really cool. Especially, I love playing in that rink, one of my favorites to play in. So yeah, overall, I was just, you know, really, really happy about that one.
Now, going back to that topic of the Friday night win, and of course, we also have to mention Quinnipiac's victory against Colgate on Saturday. You know, the Big Red held on to the 4th seed in the ECAC playoffs. Now, we already did mention the bye week, that you get the week off. And now some see this as beneficial because you can get extra rest, extra practice. But some also say that it's not the best because you lose out on potentially 3 games, which can keep you fresh and ready for the next round, etc. So what's your take on this?
Yeah, it is an interesting take. And I knew, you know, a lot of people kind of have that argument in juniors a lot with the bye. And you know, I think for us, it's a really good thing because we kind of did go on that, you know, losing skid and we've turned it around. I think this is going to be a really good time for us to just really fine tune a lot of the parts of their game. And especially, I think we've really started to kind of play back to our game the last couple of games. So I think the bye week is going to be, you know, really good for us to, you know, keep fine tuning those really specific, you know, things we've been working on. And then, you know, obviously we've had a lot of guys kind of, you know, injured this year. And I think that's just, again, a big blessing not to have to play, you know, a three game series that against any team in this league, you're going to get hit. You're just going to be a very tough fought series. So to have that break, I think, you know, for me with this team, I think is a really good thing for us.
Interesting. All right. So if I'm getting what you're saying it basically helps conserve your stamina and that you take advantage of this time to help find basically the team's own rhythm.
Yeah, I think not necessarily rhythm, I guess, but just, you know, things, you know, of course we watch a lot of video and we watch a lot of, you know, fundamental things we need to get better at, such as, you know, neutral zone play. And I think, you know, these 2 weeks are going to be really good for us just to kind of really fine tune those details. So, you know, we're going to have that, you know, going into cold. But yeah, basically that is right.
All right. And by the way, we already did, congratulations again on this past weekend getting a goal.
But we thank you.
We want to rewind it a little bit because now, Liam, you're one of a select few players who can claim this title, but you scored your first Cornell goal at Madison Square Garden, New York City. Can it be any more grander against the Harvard Crimson? Now, what an honor that must have been. Can you tell us about that goal and that moment, what you must have been feeling?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's funny. I thought I was, you know, getting really close to scoring. I think we played Princeton the weekend before and I got a couple chances and didn't score. And I was kind of wondering when am I going to score? So I kind of had these grade A chances in the slot. And then, you know, coming into Madison Square Garden, obviously that's like one of the bigger games of the year. And I kind of get a lucky tip in goal from the point that ended up going in. But you know, that was like one of the most memorable moments in my life, just because that's the first time my parents came to watch me play at Cornell, you know, as a freshman as well. It was really amazing. And it was too bad because that game we really didn't play well at all. I think we lost like 4-1 to Harvard. I think we went up 1-0 with my goal and lost 4-1. But yeah, it was like, no matter what, you know, whatever the score ended up as, it was like going to be a moment I'm going to remember for the rest of my life. So
personally electrifying moment.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, honestly, I can also recall that game as well, because that was the night I got into Cornell. Decisions came out that night, and I went to Madison Square Garden because I was an ED. I went with my dad and a couple other Cornell alumni. We saw the game. You know, obviously not the result we wanted, but yeah, you scored your first goal there.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah, that's awesome.
Out of curiosity, do you replay this moment in your head every now and then? Like, wow, what an exhilarating feeling that was.
You know, it's funny because I'd say replay the goal I scored against Yale more. I don't know why, but that was just kind of more like an emotional goal for me. Just like, you know, having the COVID year taken off, like I'd never scored at Lina. You know, I didn't really play my sophomore year. And then kind of to score that goal was like my chance to like celebrate it at the student section. Like, I think that's a goal that kind of meant more to me. But, you know, obviously still it's like MSG is the MSG, right?
Hey man, you're at the Big Apple. Me being from New York City, I could have a little bit of bias there.
Yeah.
In Manhattan, you name it. So again, I totally get it.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, furthermore, as a sophomore, you were part of a phenomenal Big Red side that was ranked first in both national polls. So to you, what was so special about that team?
Yeah, I think our depth was just insane that year. And I mean, looking like the players, whatever line you really threw out, it was like that could have been a top six line on every single team. I think like Steinberg might have been, you know, playing on our fourth line for a bit, and he's, you know, our leading scorers this year, one of our goal scorers. Like that team, you know, whoever you threw out was just so hard to play against. And then it's also incredible just to see like the starts that we would have. Like the first 10 minutes of the game, we would usually score one or two goals and the other team would get maybe like a couple shots and we would probably have around 15. Like I think our starts, I've never seen been part of a team that would start that strongly. I think those two things were, you know, massive parts or things that really stuck out to me about that team.
I see. And one could say that you're certainly wise beyond your years, Mr. Motley.
So
tell us, what makes playoff hockey so much different than the regular season?
That's a loaded question, but I think it's like anything, right? If it's, you know, you could be going home and not playing, it's like you have that extra motivation. And there's just something about playoff hockey, especially, is just, I think the physicality just picks up so much and the intensity. And it's almost like I can't even like put a thing on what exactly it is, but it's just everything is so much more intense.
I feel that. Would you say,
yeah,
would you say it's like an adrenaline rush that knowing that this is a do or die sort of moment every game, that's what basically gives it the extra push?
Yeah, I think so. Just because, you know, in the season you might let up a goal and it's like, okay, it's one goal out of however many you're going to let in. But, you know, if you let in a goal in the playoffs, that could be the difference between, you know, moving on or going home. So it's like every single little play in the game is going to matter that much more. And you can see it in how the play goes. It's just so much faster, so much quicker, so much more physical. And it just, everything really ramps up.
And just like I said earlier, you proved being wise beyond your years with that sort of answer. You admitted yourself, it was a loaded question, but just like that, you got it down. Now, you're a proud Western Canada guy, being from Calgary, Alberta. Now, speaking as someone who's never been to Canada, but is dying to go, I'll say that.
Yeah.
I'm dying to go there. What made growing up in Alberta, what made your childhood so special?
Yeah. First of all, definitely the hockey. I grew up watching the Calgary Flames my whole life. I don't know if you guys have seen where the Flames play. They play in the Saddle Dome. It's shaped like a saddle. So it's like a very, very unique arena because, you know, all the rinks now are just kind of these massive, beautiful, like rectangular buildings, obviously. And then you have the Saddle Dome, which is this, you know, iconic saddle. And you actually can't host stuff there as much because it's like a hazard because of its shape. But yeah, growing up in, you know, Calgary, I loved it there. And, you know, I think, you know, when it's all said and done, I might, you know, move back. But a big part was like outdoor, you know, activities. Like where I live is about 30 minutes from the Rocky Mountains. So I could, me and my family would go out there and we'd do a lot of hiking, you know, do backpacking trips. You know, that was a massive part. And then it was just a really like community-based city as well. You know, despite being like 1.4 million people, it was really tight knit and, you know, in the community. And yeah, I think those were kind of the big things about, you know, why I love Calgary so much.
And out of curiosity, I don't mean to be the, one could say the bearer of bad news, but this, this news is 18 years old already.
Yes.
Again, I hate to bring this up.
I know what you're going to bring up right now.
All right. So, you know, I have to bite the bullet, but do you remember the 2004 Stanley Cup final?
Game six. I think Martin Jelena got in front of the net and it went through the slot. And there was this huge controversy that, you know, it was a goal versus not a goal. And it's kind of been like a, like not a meme in Calgary that like, you know, we won the cup in 2004, but no, it's that was basically really what got me into hockey. I think I was maybe 7 or 8 years old at the time. And, you know, we kind of, the whole city just kind of, you know, gotten really enveloped in this Stanley Cup run that the Flames had, because we weren't like too great before that. And, you know, we would always go out and play street hockey and we'd plug in the speaker to the game and we blast, you know, the Calgary Fan 960, which is the radio station, and they'd listen to the games. And yeah, it was just amazing being part of that. And then, you know, obviously when I was 8 years old, cried my eyes out after we lost game seven, but you know, it was such a proud moment to be part of that. And especially guys like Jerome Iginla, like, were massive in kind of getting me into hockey.
I mean, you could only cry when you're so attached to your team. I mean,
yeah,
I totally understand that feeling back in 2012, being a Devils fan and now getting killed by the Kings. That gave me a big grudge against the Kings for a while. I think I let it go now, 10 years later, but a little bit sentiment. I totally get it.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, and I was also going to ask, being from Alberta, you know, Alberta is like one of the capitals of Canadian skiing, particularly, you know, with the Canadian Rockies. So are you a big skiing guy?
So that's the issue with hockey is, you know, once you kind of start playing competitive hockey in Canada, your weekends are basically gone for any other type of activity. So, you know, skiing was something I loved to do at first. And my dad would, you know, load us all in the back of the car on like a Sunday and we go to Sunshine Village, but like it's just like a ski resort in Canada or like Lake Louise. But once hockey started getting competitive and I got a little better, that was kind of out of the question, just because one, injuries, and then two, we just kind of didn't really have time, and my parents but kind of became just hockey parents.
Interesting.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, so you guys already you guys are already being built by the moment you come out of the womb, from what it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, it's insane with Canadian hockey how like streamlined it is to kind of get to the higher levels. And it really starts like early on. If you're playing like AAA hockey and, you know, Peewee or Bantam, you're going to be playing basically every single weekend. So your time gets really taken up pretty quickly.
I got you.
Yeah.
And speaking of which, did you ever have a little bit of sibling rivalry when it came to sports?
You know, not really. My sister was in dance, so there wasn't really too much like rivalry there. And my brother played hockey for a bit, so I didn't play with him too much. But, you know, he would come out and like play on the street. I think that's what was our big rivalry. Like,
okay.
I mean, you guys probably wouldn't believe how much street hockey, like, I basically lived in, you know, a cul-de-sac, and every house basically had two or three kids, and everyone would come out and we'd have like these massive street hockey games. Like, I'm not kidding. Basically every single day. And we would play, you know, in the winter as well. Like, we would shovel it and make it smooth. So it was like almost like ice, and we'd use tennis balls still. So we're not like killing each other with pucks, but it was a massive thing we would do. And like, that was a huge part of my childhood and like probably getting me good at hockey as well. So
I got you. The street hockey classic.
You ever have to move for the cars? Yeah.
Yes, it was every time. It was car, we'd yell, and then we'd pick up the net, like put it over there. Car would go park in the driveway, then we'd bring it back. So yeah, it was classic.
So does this mean we can count you in for the Chicklets Cup next year?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm
a great street hockey player.
Yeah. Just got to bet on that there.
Yeah.
Now, you put in some time in the AJHL, you know, and reflecting on your time in juniors in Canada, you said how it was very streamlined, but how did it help you grow as a player, like into the person you are now today?
Yeah, for sure. I think it was huge. You know, I was kind of a really late grower. Like, I'm a pretty tall guy now, but I didn't really start growing until, you know, I was 18 or 19. And then after that, I didn't really like put on much weight until a bit later. So I think going to junior was a really good thing for me to develop. And, you know, if I was kind of better earlier, probably would have gone to the Western Hockey League, but, you know, I didn't really even talk to teams then. So I think, you know, junior A was really, really good for me in terms of hockey. And then, you know, obviously having the chance to come to Cornell is like one of the biggest blessings. So I think even blooming late and like going to junior A was probably the best decision, you know, I've ever made.
Well, and I also wanted to follow that up with, you know, what made you decide for yourself, man, Cornell is the place for me? Like, when did you meet Benny Sire? Like, how did that happen?
Yeah, so, yeah, Benny Sire was the first one I talked to. He came to watch an exhibition game of me and Camrose, and I was, you know, 18 at the time. And, you know, basically right when he talked to me, I didn't really know too much about, you know, the Ivy League in general. I knew Cornell was, like, an amazing school, but right when I kind of looked it up and saw the campus, I was like, you know, this is my number one school. And, you know, the recruitment process for me was a bit longer, you know, because there's a lot of kind of flaws in the game that I had to, you know, kind of perfect. But, you know, Cornell basically was my top school from day one. And, you know, I talked to other schools, but, you know, nothing really clicked for me in terms of like the campus and the academics were huge. And then, you know, obviously you don't even need to say it, but the hockey is just such a strong program that, like, you know, it was a no-brainer for me from day one.
Yeah, see, that's interesting because we've asked that question multiple different ways to multiple different people, and nobody has really ever led off with, oh, the campus was beautiful. That's you know, I respect that. That's actually a very good way to put it.
And yeah, I was gonna say, like, not to interrupt, but like the rural campus, I think, is a really big thing for me. I kind of knew if I wanted to go to school in America that I really value like that type of the rural campus, and I didn't really want to be, you know, within a city. So that was something that Cornell, I think, was pretty unique in. And, you know, it's like, it's just been amazing for me to have that, especially staying during the summers. It's just been awesome so far.
Yeah. I mean, and from that, it seems like you would go even without hockey. Like, you
know, yeah, completely.
And hockey is like a really big part of it too. You know?
Yeah, of course. I mean, hockey's like, again, probably was the biggest, you know, factor in it, but I was still kind of looking at, you know, those other things that, you know, might seem small, but really, you know, add up to be such a big part of, you know, one's college experience. So yeah, definitely a big part.
No, absolutely. And so you're possibly most unique in the way that you bring enthusiasm and energy to the team and almost everything you do, it seems. And now with that said, what does being a true teammate mean to you? Or in other words, what's the mark of the true player?
Yeah, I mean, that's such a big question, because I think it really depends on everyone, because, you know, you could bring, you know, a bunch of leadership from scoring goals, or you could bring a lot of leadership from killing penalties. And, you know, I don't really do either of those two things. So I think, you know, looking at myself as a player, I kind of have to think, okay, what can I do when, you know, I'm not on the ice? And I think, you know, a big part of that is, you know, helping out my teammates if they're down, or encouraging others. And I think, you know, that's something I've really tried to, you know, take on, especially in my senior year. You know, I'm probably not going to be playing hockey next year. So, you know, my philosophy has really been, you know, how can I leave this place, you know, in a better place than I found it? And I think, you know, being kind of a great teammate off the ice has been, you know, a big part of that for me.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of what I think too. I mean, cause like, at least to me, it doesn't even matter how many points you put up or whatnot. Like the stats, I think the stats lie in a certain way. I mean, like, if you asked me, I'd say, oh, you're Liam Motley. Like, the team would not be complete without Liam Motley. They just wouldn't. And that's just, you know, it's really crazy. But to follow that up, we've asked this to every person who's been on the podcast so far, and now it's only fair that we ask you.
Yeah.
But who was your mentor throughout all your years in Big Red Hockey, you'd say?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I could name off like 50 guys. Like, I can name off a lot of guys, but I think, you know, two big ones for me have been Matt Nuttall and Alec McRae. But definitely the largest I just kind of talk to all the time and is, you know, I think really shaped me into the person I am today is, you know, Jeff Mallott. And, you know, he's been, you know, he's kind of was my similar stature. You know, he's like a taller guy, you know, really rangy. And he really kind of just helped me, you know, build myself into like, you know, a player who could, you know, play in college hockey games and make an impact. And, you know, of course, now I'm still, you know, more of an energy line player and, you know, don't have the same skill as Jeff Mallott, but, you know, he's been massive in, you know, developing my abilities and helping me out. And then, you know, even off the ice stuff of helping me through life, you know, when it gets complicated. So, you know, he's been huge for me.
Yeah. And I mean, Andy's got a great sense of humor too. I mean, did you see that Selly over the weekend?
Yeah. When he walked off after the shootout. Yeah, he's
stone cold there.
Yeah. Me and him, you know, we had some great times together. You know, we'd rap together all the time. We'd, you know, make fun of each other, but yeah, he's definitely one of my, you know, best friends that, you know, I'm always gonna, you know, cherish the memories with him.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, but so with that, as a senior who's been through it all, like, what advice would you give to the underclassmen?
Yeah, I think just enjoy, I mean, this is our like slogan, I think, our sophomore year, but just enjoy the ride. Like, there's not much better, you know, places you can be in life than playing college hockey at Cornell. Like, it's not going to get much better. And, you know, I've talked to tons of alumni just through, you know, networking or other events, and they basically just say, cherish it. And, you know, if you have those people saying that, coming back, it's obviously the biggest advice you can get. So yeah, I just say, you know, enjoy the ride, because it's one of the best times you're ever going to get.
Yeah. 100%. And, oh, yeah, what I guess to follow that up, like, who's the coolest / notable alum that you've met?
That's interesting. I can't really think off the top of my head. I'm sure if I, like, sat down and, like, thought of it, you know, I probably, you know, could list off a bunch. I think it was I'm not sure. Honestly, I can't give an answer to that right now, but definitely been a lot of very, you know, influential people who I know have come into our room and talked to us. So
that's totally fair. I mean, we asked because, you know, Nate McDonald just had to unveil to us that he met Ken Dryden. I'm like, whoa, would you just say that lightly? Oh, crazy.
Yeah. Did he tell you the story of that?
Yes. Yes. He told us. Yeah. He told us how he met him, but then was quickly ushered away because he wasn't supposed to meet him.
Yeah, yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Well, I suppose this is the last question, the ultimate question of the Sin Bin, because it is officially do or die time for the Big Red. Like we mentioned earlier, go big or go home. Yes, we get the week off, but we'll be back on the 11th, basically to continue in the ECAC playoffs, and we'll skate against the highest seeded victor. Now, with that being said, what do you think Cornell has to really focus on to pursue this important victory?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, like there's so many things, but I think just like kind of what we talked about before is that playoff intensity. And I think, you know, we said, you know, I think 2 weeks ago, the Clarkson weekend, we said, you know, basically every game here is playoff hockey. Like we're going to play, you know, like we're playing playoff hockey. And I think we've done, you know, the last couple of games a really good job of that. And I think we're just going to have to keep playing like that. We're going to have to be, you know, very intense, very physical, you know, do what we know, you know, we have to do to win. And again, like, I think there's a lot of things, but just that playoff intensity that we've had the last couple of games, I think we're just going to have to carry that, you know, into whoever we play.
All right. I mean, to me, it sounds like a solid plan going into the break, and
yeah,
you know, hopefully the Big Red can clinch the series and go back to Lake Placid. We have our fingers crossed. We are doing our prayers, as some would
do.
Yes.
And with that, we have to thank you so much, Liam, for joining us on the Sin Bin. But you listeners already know what's up next. It is the Slapshot round right after this.
Yeah. Awesome. Looking forward to it.
All right, welcome to the Slapshot round, where we ask hard-hitting, fun questions and have you answer them as quick as you can. Of course, we like tradition around here, so we always got to ask the first question. Are you good to go, Liam?
Yeah, I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right, Mr. Motley. Oh, man. This one has been a running gag for God knows how long. Many on the team say your music taste is questionable. Some even say terrible. Now, that's not me. Those are your teammates. It's time to give your rebuttal. Why is it not?
Okay, so usually my music taste, I don't actually like the music I play on the aux, but I play music that's kind of like very high tempo or like deep house dance music that's kind of like, you know, banging on the desk like very fast. And, you know, it does get, you know, everyone energized. And I think it's terrible music myself, but I think it does its job. So that's my rebuttal.
Interesting.
That's a great way to respond to that.
Yeah.
Now you have to walk us through the process of creating a playlist. How does one basically embrace their inner Liam Motley and create such a playlist?
You know, I have no idea, but you need to throw in some humor in there, I think. You know, maybe have a funny song to kind of get guys laughing. And then after that, maybe actually play some like decent songs, and then, you know, always finish it off. The finish is the most important thing right before you walk on the ice. You know, you want the most face melting dance song you can find. So that's the key to making the playlist.
Interesting. Okay. So is that, like, from what it sounds like, is that a lot of EDM? Is that a lot of rock? What do you think?
Yeah. Like, I don't know if you've heard of Fisher before. Fisher. It's like a,
vaguely,
a
deep vaguely, house. Yes.
A deep, he's like a deep house.
That's very EDM. Deep stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd say he'd be a big one on there. Honestly, the other artists, I have no idea. That they're just like songs I've just found in the depths of the internet. So,
Who? Someone didn't mention that you did actually search through the deepest, darkest depths of the internet to find such music. Alex, you remember who it was? Someone did say that. So it's interesting to hear that verbatim coming from
you. I don't know. I'm not entirely sure. It escapes me at the moment. I'll remember like a week later, which is why.
Now, with that being said, DJ Motley or DJ Motz, I don't know which one you prefer.
Motz is good.
DJ Motz? Okay.
Yeah.
Top five songs of all time.
Top five songs of all time. Man, that's a crazy. I think Let It Be. That's probably a song that like I'd never get tired of, and, you know, I'll always come back to it. Girl from the North Country by Johnny Cash. I think I love that song as well. One of my favorite songs, it's kind of more like a prairie type vibe song, is Saskatchewan 1881 by Coulter Wall. And it's kind of like about being a cowboy. It's like a really funny song.
Okay.
After that, I'm not exactly sure. You know, I think I love a lot of country music, but I think those three would be like the first that would come to mind.
We'll take that. We'll take a top three, and I know
respect for that. And honestly, I don't know what people are talking about, because you have incredible music taste. Everything that's, you just said there is spot on, and trust me.
That's what I've been saying. I just play the music in the room. You know?
Yeah, exactly. And often it's trying to read the room. If you don't know what other people like, because you only listen to something, or like some, you know, like if you listen to old stuff, it's almost impossible to make a good playlist for people if you have no idea what what they listen to, because all you listen to is like old stuff. And I'm a lot like that. So I don't understand that at all.
Coming from the Connecticut countryman himself.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, you've been voted, by the way, Liam, as the best DJ on the team by the staff. Now, what do you have to say about that?
Absolutely glowing reviews from Flanagan. He couldn't stop talking about it.
Yeah. I mean, Benny Sire was like, so I always get put in kind of the same spot. I'm always in the corner of the room by the DJ set. So, you know, during the COVID year, we didn't really have a DJ. So I was kind of on the aux for like a year and a half. And, you know, I'd play I'd never play rap music, and I'd never play like the new, you know, rap music. I don't really know what the genre is, but Benny Sire would just love whatever I put on, like put on some AC/DC, put on, you know, the deep house I talk about, or like, you know, some of the old stuff like Fleetwood Mac. And Benny Sire would just, you know, pump my tires every time I was on aux, but I loved it. So
interesting. Wait, so far it doesn't sound like, you know what? Given that you just named several artists right now, I'm gonna have to say that terrible taste, I'm putting that in quotes, that others say, I don't know, I feel like we have to be there in the locker room to truly understand what they mean by that.
Yeah, dude, I don't understand, man. Like, I sort of get because Ian Shane, the only person who didn't name you as the worst DJ was Ian Shane, who nominated Shenichka, because he because apparently only because he doesn't have YouTube Premium.
Like,
nothing wrong with his music, he just has ads,
so
that's kind of his thing. And now that we've heard your rebuttal and we've gotten a little bit of a taste of it ourselves, can we at the Big Red Hockey Cast get a Spotify playlist personally curated by Liam Motley, because I'm dying to like truly understand what makes you tick, man.
Yeah. So the funny thing is, I don't use Spotify either, but I do have YouTube Music.
YouTube.
So I'd be more than happy. I'll make a playlist and send it over to you guys.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be sounds awesome. Great.
We like the sound of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah. And I suppose, you already answered this question, but being from Calgary, you know, you're a country music fan. Who's your favorite country music artist? I'm curious.
That's a good question. You know, it's funny because I think, you know, I always talk about this because I'm like massive into country music, but like I don't really, you know, listen to like pop country, I guess. Like I listen to, you know, a lot of like singers from like Appalachia or you know, West Texas, kind of.
A little bit of bluegrass.
A little more indie country. So I think my favorite would probably be Shane Smith and the Saints. They're this, you know, band that's kind of gaining popularity, and they just absolutely rock the fiddle. Like their fiddle solos are out of this world.
On the fiddle. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And then Coulter Wall would probably be my other favorite. Yeah. He's born in Saskatchewan, and you know, I love his songs as well. So probably those two.
So a little bit of Canadian country there too. That's
pretty cool. Yeah. No, he's awesome. He's like a true born cowboy and just sings about like ranching and you know, living the life of a cowboy. So awesome. I love him.
No, awesome. And I also had wanted to bring up, I think you posted on Instagram a while back, you said Morgan Wallen is not country.
Okay,
now, I want to hear this. Now, that being said, because Steinberg, that's his favorite artist, apparently.
Yeah.
He said, and you know, I'm not a diehard Morgan Wallen fan, but I can listen to it. But like, what's your take there?
Yeah, so I think with Morgan Wallen, I think he's an amazing artist, but I think some of his stuff leans more into like pop, like a lot of the beats in the background are kind of like electronic, and he does like songs with Diplo, and no disrespect against Morgan Wallen, like I listen to his music as well and I love it, but like for me, like the foundation of country music is like more like storytelling aspects, and I think like he doesn't necessarily do that, but again, like he's also one of my favorite artists, so like nothing against him. You know?
No, 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 that's fair. And I mean, what you just described there was essentially the entire Dangerous the Double album.
So, yes.
Yeah, that's essentially all it is.
Yeah.
And now, let's switch gears a little bit. Can you tell our listeners about the Calgary Stampede, if you've ever been? Is it a good time in Calgary? As an American, I actually don't really know exactly what it is. So
me neither, to be honest.
Yeah, so it's kind of coined. It's coined as like the greatest outdoor show on earth. And it's basically, you know, what I guess you'd say is like an American carnival. Is that when you have kind of in the small towns?
Yeah.
The fair. Oh, the fair. It would be like
the fair.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be like a state fair kind of on the outskirts. And, you know, you kind of go play your arcade game or whatever the games are, you know, that you play. And then there's like rides and stuff like that. So kind of your typical state fair. And then you have these massive, you know, beer tents, which are run by kind of the country clubs in Calgary. And that's kind of like a big main attraction of it. And then you have like what I think's the really cool stuff is the rodeo. And it's basically the biggest rodeo. Cool. Yeah, the biggest rodeo in the world. And, you know, you get to watch, you know, these people from all over the world, all over the U.S. You know, people are coming from Wyoming, Texas, Idaho, all to kind of compete against the best of the best. So that's like amazing to watch. Like, I love watching the bull riding. That's something, you know, I worked it for a couple of years and as like a food guy who'd yell, like, get your popcorn. So, you know, I got to watch a lot of the rodeo, and yeah, I guess that's like the main thing, but you know, it's really is like an amazing time. And you know, especially if you're like, you know, in your young 20s, like great place to kind of, you know, fly cheap out to Calgary and stay a couple nights. So yeah, highly recommend it. I haven't been able to, you know, go just because I usually stay here in the summer, but you know, hopefully I'm going to be able to go this year. So
yeah, definitely on my bucket list for certain.
Yeah, for sure.
And Sean, do you have something you want to say?
Just a curious question, because you were talking about the Calgary Stampede. Is that why that football team is called the Stampeders?
Yeah, that's correct.
Oh, okay. Well, now
yeah.
We know.
Well, yeah.
I guess to follow that, do you follow the CFL at all?
You know, I don't. I don't anymore just because I'm away from home. But, you know, when I was home in the summers, like Saturday nights, you know, when we're, you know, having a barbecue kind of outside, we'd always have the game on inside. So we're winning in and out, you know. We're watching, and then we also go watch the game at home. So haven't followed it in a, you know, a couple of years, but it's definitely something like, you know, a decent amount of people follow back at home.
Yeah. And I know, because, you know, I have never had to talk so much in my life about Canadian football. I never did I imagine that would be, you know, a topic that I would actually find interesting, because, you know, from an American standpoint, like, And I don't mean to sound cocky or anything here. We don't hear anything about the CFL other than the last thing I remember about the CFL was that Johnny Manziel had apparently gone to Canada to play football. That's all I remember. That's it.
But, yeah, I feel like it's very niche in terms of like Canada.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to switch gears a little bit here. We've had many guys come talk to some pranks that you've pulled over the years. So can you tell us? Can you tell us some of the best that you pulled off on your teammates?
I think the water cup prank is my favorite. It's just like,
I was going to bring that up. Yeah.
Yeah. You just put the water cup there and then like someone pulls it and they just get water over their stall. That's kind of like a cheap prank, but it's a really funny one. Another one I like is, you know, you get fined if your phone goes off on the aux. So like I'll call the person on the aux and then they'll get like a phone call. So it'll go over the speaker and then you'll get fined for it. So that's another one I like.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I think that's kind of the two main ones I really like to do.
You get the butt. That's messed up, man. That's messed up. I got a good chuckle out of you. That's messed up. Also, if you don't mind, could you please describe the water cup prank for those who don't know?
Yeah. So basically when your helmet, you know, is at the very top of your, you know, dressing room stall, you can't see under the helmet. So, you know, you're going to go and come drag it off, you know, the shelf to put it on. And, you know, when you do that, someone puts a water cup there. So when you drag it, you know, hits the water cup and the water cup tilts over and kind of gets all over your stall. So that's, I don't know if I explained that very well, but that's the basis of it.
No, I think that's a perfect explanation.
Yeah.
So now I think it's fair to assume that every time a prank happens in the locker room, everyone just turns their eyes on you.
Yeah, that's kind of been the issue lately. I haven't really pulled many pranks, but you know, people are always like, "Oh, well, it's probably Mott's," but no, well, I've been pretty good lately. So,
well, yeah, I was gonna ask that because I was like, if somebody else had people, I'm sure have pranked other people in the locker room and they said, "Oh, Mott's just did it," and you're just like, "What? What? What?
Yeah,
wait, that wasn't like, me. I don't know what you're talking about."
Yeah. Yeah, I've just been going through my daily routine. I've never done that in my life.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Do you have any names you'd like to name about like significant other pranksters on the team? No.
Nate's definitely always in there causing trouble. Steinberg sometimes gets in on it. He's kind of more like the quieter and then gets you and you're kind of like, of course it was Steinberg, but I think
cookie thief. Come on.
Yeah. But definitely Nate is probably the other biggest one though.
Yeah. Could make sense. Now that I think about it, it does make sense.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Jeff Mallott, by the way, earlier. And we also mentioned his stone cold, ice cold celly earlier.
Yeah.
We hear that you have collaborated with him on some TikToks. Now, can you confirm that for us?
Yes, we have collaborated on a couple of TikToks and a couple songs as well. Not released yet. We need to kind of clean them up. But yeah, that is, I'm confirming that.
Oh, interesting. So are these rap albums that we can anticipate?
You know, maybe not the full album. You know, I don't know if we have the musical talent for that, but I think that like maybe like an EP, you know, maybe four or five songs, I think, you know, could be coming up in the future.
You know, okay. And by the way, well, Nate says that once I watch Interstellar, because I've never been able to finish that movie and I hear it's great, maybe you and him can sing for us. Is that all right with you?
You know, I'll be honest, Sean, I don't think that's ever going to happen. I don't think I'll ever be singing at the mic publicly, but you know, maybe in a parallel universe, you never know.
What if we sing with you? What if Alex and I sing with you to take some of that? It's not even blame. I guess blame would be the closest word, but what if we could all do it together? So, you know, it's evenly distributed.
I mean, if you guys took the lead, maybe I'd jump in as a background singer, but I think that's the best you're going to get.
Yeah. All right. Because I mean, if we chose something like Let It Be, everybody knows the words.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And
also, just curiously, is Nate very good at singing?
No, Nate definitely actually has a pretty good voice. And I was pretty shocked when I heard him sing the first time. Like, he's actually like, you know, has a pretty good voice. And, you know, I'm not going to pub him up too much, like, you know, he's got the voice of an angel or anything. But if he was at like a karaoke bar and you threw him up there, like, he'd be probably significantly better than the average person.
So it sounds like Nate McDonald is basically our Andrea Bocelli, basically.
Yes. Is that what you're saying? Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So again, we just have to ask, is it really out of the question for today? A little song from you, Liam.
You know what? It might be. Sorry, guys.
No. That's fair.
Fair enough. And by the way, with the topic of TikTok, we just have to plug in our own. We do have a TikTok of our own. So do make sure to check it out, Liam, and also everyone listening. And of course, shout out, because we do have our latest members to the team who run that, Gabby Nevin and Sofia Prieto. They do an excellent job. They always have fun doing it. And seemingly the players always seem to have fun. So once again, check that out.
Yeah. And so I guess let me switch gears here. Best hair on the team besides your own. Because I mean, if I had to pick a guy who had the best hair on the team, especially since your roster picture, you had this flowy hair. Like, you know, and that would be my vote for best hair, but like, who's got the best hair on the team right now besides your own?
I'd have to say Jack O'Leary. He just got this crazy mullet haircut. I don't even know what this haircut would be called, but it's pretty hilarious. So I have to go with him at the moment.
Yeah. I'm trying for the mullet, but it's going to take a little while.
So yeah.
See. And I noticed, so you really have to tell us this. Why did Jack Malone cut his hair?
I don't know. I wish I had a better answer to be honest. I was asking him the same thing and he didn't give me an answer.
Because I would have said, I bet every dollar I got that he lost a bet, or somebody like, you know, is it like, oh, you lost in Call of Duty, you have to cut your hair or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I think it just gets the long hair does get kind of a lot of maintenance, or gets kind of hard to handle. I had the same thing. Like, my hair was ridiculously long, and my parents were coming for senior night, so I was like, "All right, I think it's time to get a haircut."
Yeah, I can't relate. Now, to switch gears, best rink you've played at besides Lina?
Best rink? Oh, I think Princeton is such a fun rink to play at. I really like Michigan State. I don't know why, but that was just kind of like a cool spot, you know, to head to kind of a really big hockey state and play. And then I always have this love for Union. I just love how, like, the rink's kind of this old wooden structure, and then you kind of have the college, which is like this really just compact place in the middle of, you know, for Schenectady, I think. But yeah, it's definitely those, you know, those ones would be my favorites.
No, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I got a second on the Princeton one because I'd never been to Hobey Baker before this year.
Yeah.
A very rustic field rink. And, you know, not a lot of seats, although predominantly Big Red fans this time. So great for that. But, like, that, what a rink, you know. That's
yeah. It's awesome.
Now, so would you say, well, okay. Now that we've seen your rebuttal for, you know, that you're not the worst DJ, and we know, like, we know you better now, who do you think is the worst DJ?
I mean, I think the obvious answer would be Andre, because, like we discussed before, he just plays ads.
Okay.
But in my honest opinion, I think it's Jack Lagerstrom. All he plays is kind of like this really deep rap and, like, I think trap's the genre. I don't know exactly what trap is, but it's this really kind of obscure rap music, and I'm just not a fan of it. But, like, a lot of the guys seem to like it, so good for him.
Okay. Well, fair.
Yeah.
Nice. And now, you claimed you were one of the best at Chell on the team. Does that still hold up this year?
Yeah, so, you know, it's too bad. I don't really play video games too much anymore. I'll play, like, Fortnite with, you know, my friends in our living room sometimes. Yeah. But, you know, back in the day, I think NHL 15, I was, like, 300th ranked in the world or something. And I was, like, I was a very, very good player. And I'd play, like, Hockey Ultimate Team and have, like, this team kind of, like, lower rated players because I never spent money or anything. But I would basically beat anyone I would come against. So I think if you gave me a controller, I would still, you know, dominate most players on the team. But yeah, I definitely don't play as much as I used to.
You mentioned Fortnite. I just got to ask this. Have you gotten into Rocket League as of late?
No, I played Rocket League a bit in junior. I was just so bad at it because I could never time the car and the ball. So I just miss it. And then the pro players would, like, carry the ball. But no, I love that game, and I played it in junior with my friends.
I was just curious because it's also free, like Fortnite. And I was like, why not?
Yeah.
And I also was going to say, since you've mentioned all about your music taste, you know, you mentioned a whole bunch of country guys and a bit of classic rock as well. But, like, would you say that country is your favorite genre of music, or would it be classic rock or something else?
Yeah, I think country by far. I don't know what it is about it. I just, like, I think I really love the sense of place that country music has, and how, you know, there's, like, these singers coming out of Appalachia, like what I mentioned before, Texas, you know, the Canadian, you know, people on the plains singing country. Then you have, like, just wide variety. And I just love the storytelling aspect of it. You know, obviously a big part is, like, you know, how good the song sounds, but I think such a great thing about country music is that storytelling and, you know, how diverse that is. So yeah, I think, you know, just the last couple of years, even, like, I listen to country I listen to it before games now. Like, I don't really listen to, like, stereotypical, like, pump up music. So it's very interesting how, like, big of a, like, impact it's really had for me and my music taste.
Yeah. No, that is certainly, I mean, well, that would be me. And because in high school, that's what I did. I was, you know, but my only time I ever played hockey, you know, sophomore year of high school, I was bumping that country music before the game.
Yeah.
And so how about favorite class this semester?
Favorite class? Probably I'm in this class called How Reading Changes Your Life. And it's kind of like a class on, we read like six books, I think, through the semester, and really – just go through them and kind of learn how to like analyze the text, I guess, and find the meaning. But I just really like those type of courses because I'm a Dyson major, and it's really nice to kind of, you know, branch out and take, you know, these different courses that, you know, I don't have to take, but I've really enjoyed the course so far.
Well, that's awesome. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
And I mean, to switch up, because our producer is dying to know, are you a fan of, quote, The Hip?
Oh, The Tragically Hip? Yes.
Yes.
Actually, I can't believe I forgot that on my top five songs. I was going to say Wheat Kings by The Tragically Hip. And it's about this person, I think, who was put in jail for wrongfully murder or something. And it's kind of a song. It's such a Canadian song. There's a loon call at the beginning and mentions like the CBC and stuff. It's like, it's an amazing song. Definitely one of my favorites. So yeah, I can't forget to add that to the list.
Well, yeah. Our producer tells us that was actually played at his graduation ceremony. So
yeah, amazing song. I love it.
Yeah. Now, Liam, you're a guy who is good at talking, good at improvisational talking, and you're also pretty funny. So have you ever considered a career in stand-up?
No, I think I would be a horrible stand-up comedian just because I would not know how to handle it if the joke has gone wrong. I've always thought of starting a YouTube channel though, and you know, I'm hoping, you know, probably next year, if I'm not playing hockey, be able to start that and, you know, put that and see how it goes. But yeah, definitely would not be interested in doing stand-up comedy though.
I think you would do all right. And I know we have Alex, I believe, is actually who does the telephone chants with you usually, Skylar Holzman. He himself is a stand-up comedian. So I mean, maybe you two could get into practice, you know, and then eventually you could be headlining, you know, an Upper East Side show in Manhattan. So who knows?
I don't know about that one, but you never know. Leave your options open.
Yeah. Exactly. And we'll certainly be subscribing to that YouTube channel.
That is
true.
I'll let you know.
Speaking of performance skills, how are those dancing skills, Liam?
I think my stanky legs definitely my strongest aspect of my dancing skills.
I got you.
Other than that, I'm probably really average, but to bring out the stanky leg, that's all I need. You know, you just play to your strengths. So.
All right. Out of curiosity, can we see it? I know right now we're doing this on Zoom, and I know the mic.
You know, I have a tough knee, you know, right now, so I might not be able to do it.
I got you.
No. That's the last thing we want is him injured before the.
No voice, no knee. This day can only get better.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. So why is Liam Motley not playing? He was on the Big Red Hockey Cast. We asked him to do the stanky leg. Oh, it was great. Yeah. No, that's fine. At some point, no.
Yeah.
Okay. And I guess to follow it up, I know you mentioned the stanky leg, but what is one thing you're amazing at besides hockey? Or, like, do you have any wacky skills? Because I know we've asked a bunch of players this. I know Lockett told me he was getting ridiculously good at darts. I don't know if you can speak to the authenticity of that, but, like.
Yeah, Locke's definitely – he's one of those guys who's, like, really good at, like, sports like that. And, like, the sports you just play, like, that we never play. He always just ends up being good, like, spike ball or something.
Oh, yeah, spike ball.
I'm pretty good at spike ball. We won – me and I think Ertl won the spike ball championship at, like, we do our retreat to, you know, a cabin. Badminton's probably my other special skill. I used to be really good in middle school. And then everyone started playing club badminton and I was playing hockey. So I kind of started getting, you know, spanked a lot in that, but I think I won my regional in middle school. So it's good at that. Yeah. So that's my special talent.
Interesting. All right. I mean, I definitely would not have expected badminton or badminton. I know some people say it differently. Some don't pronounce the T. Some do pronounce the T.
Yeah, so. I have no idea either.
What is the most overrated film that you'd still watch because it's good, but in a bad way, or overrated way?
Overrated. You know, people are going to hate me for saying this, but I think Pursuit of Happyness. I don't know. It just,
Oh.
And the thing is, everyone loves that movie. And I think it's like still a good movie, but I think it's a bit overrated. Sorry to say, everyone.
No. This is hot takes. I certainly appreciate that because it definitely gives us more to talk about in the future, certainly.
Yeah.
Now I have to confess, because apparently I may need to add that to my movie list, because I did not watch that long. I just didn't finish Interstellar, for the record, before I get bombarded with comments.
Nate McDonald's coming for you, Sean.
I know. I just didn't finish it.
Watch Interstellar.
But I've never watched Pursuit of Happiness, to be honest with you. Now, I do know it has Will Smith in it, so the Prince of Bel-Air is in it, but I know it's a drama. Now, you briefly touched upon this, and perhaps it's a hard hitter. We did mention earlier that we do have hard-hitting questions.
Okay.
You teased on your Instagram, quote unquote, "Don't worry, guys, I'm coming back for a fifth year." I see that smirk going across your face. So can you confirm or deny this statement?
Yeah. So that's kind of just been a running joke that I made of like, I'm coming back for a fifth year. I'm not coming back for a fifth year. I'm going to be moving on and working next year. But I don't know. I've always kind of like, toyed with it and like thought it was kind of a funny joke. But yeah, I'm going to have to deny that statement.
Oh, man, that almost hurts a little bit. It almost hurts a little bit, but you know,
it hurts me as well. Don't worry.
If you want to ever pursue a fifth year, you know, you're always welcome here with massively open arms. So
you don't ever
have to worry about that. And also, out of curiosity, where would you be working if you don't mind us asking?
Yeah. So I'm working at TD Securities next year in New York City. So I'm really excited to do that, you know, because it was pretty hard for me to like find something with, being a Canadian, dealing with the visa situation, but I'm really excited just because all my friends are going to be there, living with two of my teammates. So it's going to be awesome.
I got you. Congratulations.
I'm sure you'll get to say hi to, you'll get to say hi to, Noah Ball. I'd heard he was working in New York too at Goldman Sachs.
Yeah. So we have a visit in the summer and, he's there working. So there's actually a lot of alumni who are going to be there. So it's going to be really awesome just to kind of have that friendship circle like right off the bat. And then, I can't wait for the MSG game. That's going to be like something I'm really looking forward to, just to see a lot of my old teammates play again and cheer them on. So it's going to be fun.
I got you. Again, congratulations on that. And if you ever need help navigating around Manhattan and Brooklyn specifically, I mean, you got me, man. You got me.
Yeah. I'm sure I'm going to have a lot of trouble. So
don't worry.
Make sure to remember that.
Just learn how to take the subway. The subway takes you everywhere, man. That's why. Fun fact, I don't have a license. So a driver's license. The stereotype's a little true.
Oh, that's good advice. So I have to learn that quick.
I got you. Now, because we did mention this earlier, who on the team is most likely to go viral on TikTok?
Go viral? I think Zach Bramwell. I feel like he'd kind of be the person to do like the dancing TikToks and like, know how to like navigate the algorithm and stuff. I feel like he'd kind of be one of those, TikTok like e-boy type people.
E-boy type?
Yeah.
That's fair.
If you know what I mean, if you've ever seen like those guys before.
I know what you mean.
No, we know what you mean.
I would have totally put my money on Nate. I thought for sure Nate was going to get it.
Yeah, Nate. Yeah.
I don't know.
Nate would be a good choice as well. I think he wouldn't be like the e-boy type, but I think he'd do some like weird comedic thing or something.
Yeah.
No, not too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I mean, on the topic of comedy, what is your favorite joke to tell that never ceases to that it just always gets him going?
I don't know, honestly. I feel like just like we impersonate other guys, which is like funny thing, but like we never have like a one thing we kind of like go back to, I guess.
Yeah Have you so what's your take? Because I honestly, my take was that from an American standpoint, the guy on the team who sounds the most like he's from Canada but's not actually from Canada would be Cody Haskinen.
Yes, like, for sure,
with regard to his accent.
Yes, definitely.
And like, no shade to Cody, I love him dearly, But like, oh my goodness, because like you just had that deep Midwestern accent. Like, yes. Have you like have you ever tried to like, you know, I guess impersonate Cody or what? Who's the person you like often impersonate the most on the team?
Yeah, sometimes we make fun of Cody's accent when he goes like, he was like our quartermaster 2 years ago, and he'd always go, you know, get your fines in. So we'd kind of like imitate that all the time, and that was kind of one of the funny ones we did. But nice. I love Cody, so no offense against him.
No, of course, absolutely none. And so recently we had the Olympics, and those just ended recently. Now my question from that is, would you ever want to try curling?
Yes, curling is in Canada is like electric. Like when we have like the province, like the Canadian championship, and all the provinces play against each other, like it's like a sold out crowd, and it's like crazy. So I would love to do curling if I could, you know, play in one of those. But yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, like people have their shirts off and have the province flags on them. It's awesome.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
No.
Now, I suppose this is the final slapshot question, unfortunately. Now, some say this is the hardest. Some say this is the easiest question. Any shout outs or final comments about your Big Red career?
Yeah, I mean, I think shout out to the line of faithful in general. Like, it's been like, it's honestly a privilege to be able to come out every single night and have people standing on their feet for you and cheering you on, no matter like how the team's doing. Like, it hasn't been like perfect the last 4 years. So definitely them. And then, you know, my team as well. And then, you know, just the students as well in the student section. Like, especially this year, I found like so much support from them. You know, I think last year with the season getting canceled, we all kind of, you know, really cherish like what Cornell hockey is, you know, within the team and like even the students. And I think the support this year has been like not new, like just incredible. So, you know, basically a big shout out to everyone involved with Cornell hockey, you know, you guys, everyone who's, you know, promoting stuff like this is just, you know, it's amazing, and you know, incredibly thankful to be, you know, part of a place like this.
Well, first we got to thank you again, spending your career with us and, you know, always delivering fantastic performances. Again, we just have to thank you. And that was very well said, very eloquent of you. Again, you seem to be one of the people who found that the easiest, seemingly.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because it's such a, you know, wide scope of people. You know, you think of everyone you've kind of come across, you know, when you're 4 years, whether, you know, you play Cornell hockey or you don't play Cornell hockey. You know, it's such a hard thing to kind of express that gratitude to so many people. But yeah, I think, you know, again, just an amazing place to be, you know, an amazing place to spend, you know, my 21 to 25 years of age. So yeah, incredibly thankful for this place.
And I suppose with that being said, thank you so much, Liam, for spending your time with us today. Again, we wouldn't be able to do this without you and your teammates. And again, we just have to thank you for sparing your time, and best of luck in New York City. Hopefully I bump into you on the subway or something.
Yeah, sounds great. Yeah, thanks again, guys. Really appreciate you and making the time and having me on. And I love the questions today, so keep those up for the next guys coming on.
Of course, it's an honor.
Yeah, awesome.
We'd say if there's we have a list of guys that we want back so far have been the best. So I think you'd be on our list as well.
Yeah,
so,
thanks, Alex. Appreciate that.
Of course, no worries. It's been an honor. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Well, to quote Alex, always good to hear from our boy, Liam Motley. You know, now that we've gotten a taste of his, one can say, unique DJing skills, we do have the week ahead to cover. And with that being said, Cornell University gets the next weekend off and will eagerly await the top-seeded first-round winner in the ECAC quarterfinal from March 11th to either March 12th or March 13th. Now, Alex, could you explain to our latest listeners how the ECAC playoffs work?
Well, certainly. So, like, in a nutshell, everybody makes the playoffs, so you're guaranteed to make the first round. However, your seeding determines whether it's home ice or whether you're away. So the first round, well, because we clinch the fourth spot, we get an automatic bye into the quarterfinal, as you said, and we also get home ice advantage. But for the first round anyways, first round is a best of three matchup. The fifth seed will play the 12th seed. The sixth will play the 11th and the 10th, the seventh will play the 10th and the eighth will play the ninth.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially for us, our most likely opponent would be Colgate because they're the number five seed. However, they have to beat Yale, guys, we're rooting for Yale this weekend, it looks like. Then we have to play RPI. And that's all I'll get into it because we got Union's playing Princeton, RPI is playing Dartmouth, Colgate's playing Yale, and SLU is playing Brown. So that's going to be pretty cool to see. Anyways, the semifinal, again, Cornell, this is a big if, but if we will again face the highest ranked team in the semifinal, but that will be a single elimination game in Lake Placid. So no best of three. It's a golden game. That's all you get. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the final. The final is in Lake Placid. That is the last day of competition. And I believe they also have a third place game as well earlier that day. But so essentially, once you get to Lake Placid, there's no best of three series. However, so this next weekend is going to be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday if necessary. And Sunday is going to be at 4. So it's going to be a very interesting series. If we play Colgate, I think we'll be prepared. But, you know, I always like to see if we could play somebody who's a little bit, you know, lower seeded. But, hey.
Yes. Well, I mean, I guess all we have to say is, you know, say your prayers, cross your fingers, whatever you need to do. Bring a lucky charm if you need so that Cornell can actually write their names once more in the history books. And with that being said, thank you for tuning into this episode of the Big Red Hockey Cast for and from the Line of Faithful. This has been a Big Red Sports Network production. BRSN is a student-run organization dedicated to promoting the voices of Cornell student athletes. Make sure to check out at CornellBRSN on Instagram and www.cornellbrsn.com. And of course, shout out to our producers, Michael Farku, Mike Seitz, and Jay Klein. And we'd also like to thank Ben Rudoy, John Ashbrook, Gabby Nevin, and Sophia Prieto, our latest members to the Big Red Hockey Cast team. Thank you for listening once again. Ciao, ciao for now.